Do you have a golf trip with the boys planned this summer? Or are you looking for an excuse to have one? Do you want to get that trip sponsored? Well, Mizzen & Main has you covered. Mizzen & Main, the makers of the greatest dress shirt of all time, makes more than just work clothes. If they can make a dress shirt comfortable, imagine what they can do with golf polos, pants, shorts, pullovers, and even t-shirts. Right now, they're looking for golfers who want free polos. If you and your golfing group are planning a trip this summer, you can apply for free polos and swag for your entire group. You may have seen a few professional golfers wearing Mizzen on TV on Sundays. Everything they make is good enough for the PGA pros and comfortable enough for even the highest of handicappers. The Mizzen & Main Bro-Am is a sweepstakes running from February 26th until March 10th. It's a chance to get your group of golfing buddies covered in Mizzen & Main along with a bunch of free swag. All you have to do is apply at mizzenandmain.com/bro-am-sweepstakes. All the info is on their social channels as well, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and everywhere else. After you've applied for the Bro-Am, because why not, it's free, visit www.mizzenandmain.com to start shopping. Use promo code GOLFIQ to get 25% off $130 or more at mizzenandmain.com. This is the Golf IQ podcast, a place for golf nerds to dive into the science and uncover the secrets to playing better golf. I'm the host, Luke Herdeneen, and welcome. So Drew, usually I hate playing winter golf. I just think between the fake tees and the temporary greens and the cold weather and the layers, I just feel like it's not a very good reflection of my game, and I always ended up walking away thinking that it didn't really help me much. And one of our colleagues, Jamie Kennedy, a Scottish colleague, he's a really talented video producer who helps me with a ton of stuff, said, Luke, what you should do is you should start playing hickory golf in the winter. It just makes it more fun, and he started espousing all these benefits that it does. And so I've started doing that. I've probably played about 5 hickory rounds this winter, and man, it's so much fun. And not just fun, it's a great way to scratch the itch during the colder months up here in New England, but it's also something that's been teaching me kind of a lot about the game. So I kind of just wanted to run through some of the things that I've noticed playing it, and maybe we can meditate on what some of the real world applications can be for golfers.
Totally. Yeah, no, I haven't done too much hickory golf myself, but I would imagine it's sort of the idea that if you're practicing with a piece of equipment that is more demanding and you need to be more precise, then when you go back at the beginning of the season to your regular stuff, it's going to feel a lot easier.
Right.
I would imagine, at least, that's what you found.
Exactly. But. And that sort of brings us to the first thing I've learned, which is, so the driver I have is this tiny little head. It's probably about the same as a modern day mini driver. So bigger than the 3-wood because it has a deeper face, probably about 14-ish degrees of loft. You hit this thing off the toe, it dive bombs left. Hit it off the heel, it flies so far to the right. And so one thing I think this has really helped me with is I wouldn't say I'm swinging softer with it, but in some ways it really forces you to focus on your tempo, especially from the top of the swing, if that makes sense. Like, I was playing hickory golf with a guy who was using this driver the other day, and it took him just holes to adapt because this was his first time ever playing it. And he was just saying, oh, I'm snatching the club away, I can't do it. And as soon as I realized that that speed in your swing should kind of build slowly, that it's, think about your golf swing as always increasing every step of the way until you get to impact. There shouldn't be a discernible pause in the middle of it. That seemed to really help him. And that's something I've noticed too. And I think there's a lot to it.
It's amazing. So you think that, nailing that transition move a little smoother tempo just allows you to hit the center of the face more often. Another thing I found, I've hit with hickories a few times, is the shafts are really, I don't know how they compare to our shafts today, but they're definitely different, and they require a different sort of tempo and swing tempo to sort of you know, hit them in the center of the face.
Right, because they're a lot heavier, but they're not necessarily stiffer. So it's this weird combination of flexible and heavy, which means that when you start snatching it, then the club can go all over the place in some ways, because you're moving your arms really fast. And that's why you would see players like Bobby Jones get really wristy, because he's all trying to turn it into one big extension of his arms. And I found it really helps my tempo, and it gives me a good swing thought, and maybe one that hopefully listeners out there can apply too, is that as soon as you get to snatching the club away, stopping, and then ripping it through on the downswing, that stop-start motion really doesn't help when you're swinging a hickory driver, which I think exposes a bit of an underlying issue that can crop up with modern day golf clubs, that the stop-start motion isn't always the best way of doing it. You should think, the golf swing will pause, yes, but you should think about it in terms of a singular motion, that your club head speed starts at 0 miles per hour and then it constantly is increasing all the way through, like a whipping motion.
And the fastest point in the swing should be right at impact. It shouldn't be, some people get that where they take it quickly in transition, and the fastest point of their swing might be 2 or 3 feet behind the golf ball.
Exactly.
You really want to wait until right at impact, and that's where the most speed is.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it's almost like you're corralling a rope or something, that, you know, or it's like a car accelerating down a runway. It's constantly getting faster and faster. And there's actually a lot of science that will show that when you take an elongated pause at the top of your swing, it can start screwing up the way you transfer your weight, the way you pull the club down into transition. It can just start making things a little messy on the back end. The pause shouldn't really be intentional. It should feel to you very fluid.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like modern equipment is almost too good, if that makes any sense. It doesn't punish mishits as much as it used to, which is great for players who are looking to have more forgiving golf clubs and hit better golf shots, but it might not reinforce the need for solid contact and a good, nice swing with good tempo, like, you know, hickory clubs would, where they're not going to be forgiving if you hit it right off the toe or off the heel, like you said. So it requires that level of precision and a focus on center face contact that maybe our clubs today don't as much.
Yeah, and it's a good kind of reminder, at least it was for me, that you put the ball on the center of the face and you're probably going to get it in play. And that's really all you need off the tee. Yes, distance is super important. I talk about it a lot, as does Drew. But you hit the thing relatively close to the center, it's probably going to be in play, and then you can start playing. But anyway, the other thing I really wanted to talk about is that these irons, the hickory irons, the ball comes off and it just comes off low spin. I mean, these things are like knuckleballs. You just can't get enough spin on them. And they actually go really far because they just come off with no backspin, really. They're like bullets. And really the only way that I've found you can play with them is just by playing the ball back in your stance, swinging a little smoother, and just hitting this knockdown shot. And that will kind of get you from point A to point B. And every time, I basically never hit a full shot with a hickory iron. It's just too hard. You just have to hit this knockdown-y kind of pitch shot. And I feel like amateur golfers just don't ever think about hitting this knockdown shot. And they should. It's so easy to just get from point A to point B, keep the ball in play, move it forward, putting the ball a little back in your stance and swing a little shorter or a little easier. You just won't get in much trouble that way. And you'll probably make more solid contact doing them. I don't know. Am I off base here, Drew?
No, I think that's totally right. Just take a couple more clubs and just swing, you know, a 3/4 shot. Once you start feeling like you need to max out, you know, with your driver, that's one thing. But when you get into mid short irons, you're not trying to hit those full. You don't want to be anywhere close to 100%. your dispersion is going to be a lot tighter if it's just a 75% swing. Almost feel like you're taking it, you know, shoulder height to shoulder height, like Tommy Fleetwood does.
Right.
You're just going to control the trajectory a lot more. It'll go a fly a little lower, but it'll fly a lot straighter.
Yeah, it will fly straighter, lower, a little shorter, but it'll also run more. And again, some of the, well, there are two kinds of really bad mishits that I think screw up most amateur golfers. The first is these disaster contact errors, right? You set up over a 7-iron and then you just chunk it into oblivion, or you thin it, or you shank it, or you just don't get the ball anywhere near the center of the club face. And then the other one, I think, is, at least from what I see, is they set up for a full 7-iron. They probably should be hitting a 6-iron or 5-iron into whatever pin, so they're underclubbing themselves. They take a big lash at it, and then, you know, again, they leave the club face open, the ball flies to the right, they pull it left, they yank it, and then they're in some weird chipping spot. I would really recommend, I'm not a coach, but just as a golfer and as a player, and something that Hickory Golf has reminded me, just learn, take 5 minutes and learn a mini go-to knockdown shot, because it's so low maintenance that you're probably not going to get worse learning it.
What about your expectations when you play with Hickories? Do you think it's sort of taken away the expectation? It allows you to have a little more fun, a little more artistry involved,
Yeah,
versus regular equipment?
I definitely think it. So listen, 99% of people listening to this won't be like, oh, I'm going to go play Hickory Golf now. And they shouldn't. But I do think there are lessons you can learn. And one of those lessons is that there's just no point trying to get super analytical with Hickory clubs, because there's so much variance in terms of how these freaking clubs can fly. It changes all the time. So I don't bother looking at yardages. I don't have a full set of clubs. I only have a set of six Hickories. I'm just mostly going by feel. The sand wedge is so hard to hit. I almost never use it unless I'm literally in the sand. I'm bumping and running. And it just forces you to figure out a different way of doing things. And I think that what it's reinforced to me is that, yeah, I have more fun. I also understand how good golf is played, which is just getting from point A to point B in a unspectacular fashion. Often that means running it along the ground as best as I can, right? And I think that this is advice that a lot of mid-handicap should really hear with this. Around the greens, don't maybe you should leave your lob wedge in the bag a little more. From the fairway, like we said, maybe we should hit more knockdowns. Off the tee, swinging for the fences is fine on wide open holes, but teeing it down a smidge lower and really focusing on solid contact, these things can, I think, have a lot of upside for your game.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious where you got your Hickory clubs. If people are kind of curious listening to this and they did want to go buy some, where do you think they could where should they head?
So there's a ton on eBay, which you can get for super cheap, but they'll probably break on you because they're just so old and it's they're hit or miss. So I got my clubs from this place, Louisville Golf. This guy handcrafts them. Not a sponsor in any way, shape, or form, just makes really cool products. And if you're interested in it, you should go check it out because I've had a lot of fun playing it. I feel like I've learned a lot about my game. So I would highly recommend taking the lessons and having anyone try. Hello, I'm Luke Curtinine, the host of the Golf IQ podcast, and we've got some very exciting news here in Golf Digest land. It's a new newsletter available exclusively to Golf Digest Plus members, and it'll land in your inbox once a week. It's the greatest newsletter in all the land here at Golf Digest, but I admit there is an upstart rival in the ranks, and it goes by the name of the Low Net newsletter with Sam Wyman, who's here right now. Sam, what's the lowdown on your newsletter?
Well, my newsletter, Luke, is the reason that you are competing for second place at best. My newsletter, as you said, is called Low Net. It's geared towards golfers like myself who are very much in the middle of the pack at your course or your club. It's a game I live and breathe, and I'm obsessed with getting better.
No, in all seriousness, it's a great read. It's full of not just really interesting and helpful stuff, but really relatable stuff from the man who probably loves golf the most of anybody here at Golf Digest. So head over to golfdigest.com/plus, sign up and start enjoying both of these awesome newsletters each and every week.